all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, July 13th, National Franks and Beans Day. I can't play the clip from Something About Mary, but some of you are thinking about that right now. I know it. Coming up later this hour in Hometown Health, a family physician from the Kickapoo Valley tells us how everyone can play a direct role in making sure that new pollution standards for power plants and vehicles are not weakened by industry lobbyists. In a moment, we'll talk about Iowa's sad slide for women. In the middle of the night Tuesday, Iowa Republicans rushed through a near-total abortion ban. We'll talk to an OBGYN there about the impact on her patients and on women across Iowa. If you missed our last hour, a study in contrasts Tom Tiffany's conspiracy theories versus Gwen Moore's work to lower prescription drug prices. Well, you can catch that show anytime by subscribing to it as a podcast. We're on Apple, Spotify, all the usual places. And, of course, you can go to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. So, again, just a very busy hour ahead with Dr. Joel Charles at 7:30, Dr. Francesca Turner in just a moment, by way of Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's back with us. Kristen, good morning again. And am I sad? Am I frustrated? I don't know that we're doing this again, but this time with another state, with Iowa and the politics there. But as somebody who is active with the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, you have to follow these things on a state-by-state basis and had to watch what unfurled in Iowa yet again.
This is what happened after Dobbs. You know, when we had Roe, we had federal protections, but when Dobbs happened, suddenly we had this patchwork quilt across the United States of all of these different laws and regulations. And we all saw what happened in Wisconsin. We reverted back to this 1849 criminal abortion ban. Well, in Iowa, it was different, but kind of the same. And they've gone back and forth in the court system. It's been very confusing. It's very hard for us to take care of our patients as women's healthcare is constantly, rapidly changing on the whims of politicians and within the court system. And we saw it again the other night in Iowa.
And so to that end, we bring in Dr. Turner, an obstetrician gynecologist in the Des Moines area. Dr. Turner, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. You're welcome.
So let's start from a personal standpoint. Like Kristen said, you've seen the ups and downs that we'll explain later to the listeners of how Iowa law and how the legislature has ebbed and flowed. What was it like for you this week, given what the legislature did?
It was definitely, we knew it was gonna happen and we knew the law was gonna pass because our governor called a special session. So she called all the legislatures back with 6 days notice to try to pass this bill. So we knew she had the votes, otherwise she wasn't gonna do that. So we knew it was gonna pass. But the people that were abortion advocates showed up. We were at the state capitol. We were testifying about this bill and the harms it's going to do for our patients.
And yet, again, with such short notice, it's not like minds were going to be changed, but you had to have that show of support for women's healthcare rights out there. The fact that it's a, you know, so-called 6-week ban, it really is more a near total ban, isn't it?
So yes, so 6 weeks is this arbitrary cutoff. 6 weeks, a lot of women don't even know they're pregnant. Women don't get regular periods for a variety of reasons. They could have chronic illness, they could have polycystic ovarian syndrome, a host of other disorders that make their periods unpredictable. So unless a woman is planning on doing a pregnancy test every day, and yes, there are great, very effective contraceptive options, but nothing's 100%. And so women would have to be very diligent if they had a contraceptive failure. And then they put in these very vague and arbitrary exceptions for life of the mother or rape and incest that are almost unusable. So really, it's a near total ban.
I'd go so far as to call it insulting. The 45-day window to get the exception for rape, you have to have reported the rape to law enforcement or a healthcare provider within that 45 days, which is basically also 6 weeks, you know, 6 weeks is 42 days. Yeah. Kristen, that kind of language, again, you, one of your base points is that these numbers have no basis in science. They're just plucked out of a politician's backside.
Yeah. What does 6 weeks mean? Mm-hmm. What does 15 weeks mean? They're just arbitrary numbers that they're entirely meaningless when it comes to taking care of our patients. And to Dr. Turner's point, 6 weeks, the way we date a pregnancy is based on your last menstrual period. So for those first 2 weeks of the pregnancy, you're not even pregnant. So you're truly only 4 weeks pregnant. And it's so hard. It's hard to know you're pregnant. And if you know you are, it's hard to get your resources and your decision-making and all of those things together in that short period of time. So a 6 week ban really is a near total ban.
And just one more point to that is, like, when you put these arbitrary cutoffs on women, there are women who might make a decision to have an abortion because they know they're on this timeline. If we can give women time to think, talk to their families, get resources, maybe some women will choose not to have an abortion. But I feel like by making these strict cutoffs, you are forcing women to make decisions rapidly that they might not want to make.
That's a very excellent point, one that hasn't been made here before, and I thank you for that. We're going to take a break for quick commercial messages. We'll get the updated weatherology forecast. Then we'll continue this conversation with Dr. Francesca Turner in Iowa and Dr. Kristen Lyerly right after this. You're up north. Our conversation with Dr. Francesca Turner and Dr. Kristen Lyerly in just a bit. First, I need to express some concern for folks who are listening on Lake Air up in Amory, because I've been able to check temperatures and find out that it is 59 degrees now here on Lake Wissota, 64 in La Crosse. Hayward, folks listening to Buzz of the North, you're coming in at 62, and the folks listening to Oshkosh Air Support, it's 62 there. But I have tried multiple times to get the temperature for Amory in the National Weather Service computer website, and it keeps coming back as an error. So I'm concerned about Amory, that it may not be there. So anybody there that wants to confirm, you can let us know, and we would be very happy to have you here. All right, when we get a second, we're going to hear from the folks at Weatherology who make the rounds around a lot of radio stations and sometimes run a little bit late. So we may jump in at some point to hear from Jennifer or Michael or who's ever holding down the fort this morning. But for the moment, let's continue our conversation with Dr. Lyerly and Dr. Turner about the abortion ban in Iowa that was passed this week. And again, we've already established that 6 weeks essentially means nothing. It's essentially a total ban. So Dr. Turner, we have created this checkerboard, and we've talked, Kristen and I have talked about how many people will either go to the Twin Cities or to the Chicago area. Where does this leave women in Iowa once this ban is signed and in effect?
So right now, the law that was passed is virtually identical to the law that was passed in 2018 that went through the Supreme Court and was found unconstitutional. This law, they're retrying with a different Supreme Court, kind of the quick answer. Which is why they're retrying. So it will, I'm sure the Planned Parenthood and ACLU will file a lawsuit, and it will not go into effect today when the governor signs it. So we have a year or two until it goes through the courts. Once it does that, women in Iowa, our options are going to be to Chicago or Minnesota. And lots of women, I had a woman who doesn't speak English and walks to our hospital for care on Monday, and she wasn't going to be able to access resources because she doesn't have those resources. So it's going to be rough for a lot of my patients that need sometimes life-saving care.
The fact that there is a new state Supreme Court, essentially, as you put it. If I'm not mistaken, that's because there were recall elections for Iowa Supreme Court justices at some point not too long ago, right?
Yeah.
That again, just Kristen, it tells you where the politics come in and why we focused so much on this last Wisconsin Supreme Court race.
Yeah, it's really true. And, you know, I want to pivot a little bit away from abortion because it hasn't been a complete loss for medicine in Iowa. And there was actually a huge victory in Iowa earlier this year. So, Dr. Turner, tell us a little bit about some of the good things that are happening in Iowa.
So Iowa was one of the few states in the Midwest that did not have tort reform. I think that's what you're referring to. And so tort reform is when physicians could be sued for pain and suffering for unlimited amounts of money. Now, people who have medical complications, they will still be compensated at the same exact rate for care and taking care of those complications. But there is a cap on how much someone could get for pain and suffering. Iowa has had one of the largest lawsuits in the nation, I think, for an obstetrician gynecologist. And so tort reform passed this year, and so that was great.
Yeah, it's so important. And I think to underline the importance of tort reform, if you've got these outrageous lawsuits, it makes it really hard to practice in a state, and it drives physicians out of a state. And in a state like Iowa, much like in Wisconsin, we have a hard time recruiting physicians and maintaining physicians in our states, particularly in rural parts of the state. So yeah. Having a victory like tort reform is huge for the future of Iowa, although this abortion issue is pulling it in the other direction.
So Iowa, I am sure you're aware, is 50th. So we have the fewest number of OBGYNs per capita than any other state. And so we already have a difficult time recruiting physicians, especially rural Iowa is huge maternal healthcare deserts. And then So tort reform hopefully will help that. But then for OBGYNs, you add the restrictions on our ability to care for women, and it just complicates the matter even more.
What does that mean in terms of maternal mortality now and what you fear it will be like in the future in a state like Iowa?
Well, I have previously worked at tertiary care centers in our state, and we would get, there's not a lot of them. We're like centered in Des Moines at the University of Iowa and Omaha. And so people would be life flighted into Des Moines, literally from half the state. And this could be, again, bleeding or very preterm deliveries, things like that. So when you have, and people would travel sometimes 2 hours to come to their OB appointment. So they'd need to take the whole day off, right? They'd have to drive 2 hours there. They'd have their appointment. Sometimes that's once a week. Sometimes if they have a high-risk pregnancy, which is why they're traveling so far, it's twice a week. So very complicated.
Well, and I told Kristen this story previously. I was speaking with a now retired fire department official who said, you know, it's always kind of cute when you see the news story about a paramedic or a firefighter or what did we have recently? A city bus driver having to deliver a baby. And it makes for a nice novelty story, but there's going
That's
to be
not cute.
There's going to be right. There's going to be more tragic outcomes when you're counting on somebody other than an OBGYN to make that delivery.
Especially if it's a high risk delivery. Right. I don't know any firefighter or bus driver who is excited about delivering.
Oh, please, firefighter. I don't know. There are family physicians and their ER docs who don't want to get anywhere near a delivery. And yet,
but in
more communities, you're going to face people going to, you know, they don't have an OBGYN. They might have a general practitioner. They might have an ophthalmologist going, you're it. Sorry, pal, you know, deliver this baby.
We have learned that, I think, as OBGYNs, we're kind of unicorns in the medical field because anytime somebody is pregnant, whether it's 4 weeks or 40 weeks, we are the experts. And that just, it emphasizes how important it is to have the right people in the right places and the necessity of creating a climate to welcome not just OBGYN doctors, but family medicine docs. You know, there are a lot of family medicine docs in rural parts of our country who are carrying most of the load for the obstetrical care. So we've got to have this supportive environment for obstetrical care for women and families, especially in rural parts of the country.
Yeah. Dr. Sherman, yeah, go ahead.
To your point, our hospital, actually we have an OBFP fellowship. So we train family doctors to go out to rural Iowa and be able to perform C-sections and do DNCs and expand their maternal health coverage, because we don't have enough OBs in our state, which actually is another thing that came out of Iowa, some funding for this. I think that's going to help impact maternal health in our state significantly.
When you talk to, and I don't know how much, you know, lobbying you did, but when you, as you talk to individual legislators, do you get any sense that these are folks who are kind of riding a post-Dobbs wave, but then maybe, you know, some more humanity and compassion will be shown, or do we have, I guess, what you would call some true believers, and that there really isn't going to be any hope for modification in the ban until the party makeup changes in Iowa?
Yes to all of that. So there are definitely people who are not going to be swayed, whether they're true believers or political believers, I don't know. There are definitely people in that party, I don't think, that feel that this is the right or appropriate bill, but feel like they have to make these votes along those lines. And this year, particularly when talking to different people, I could hear definitely some more empathy coming out than I've ever heard before, because I think before they didn't think all of this would happen, because we had Roe sort of supporting some of it. But now without Roe, anything's possible. So.
Hey, I really want to point out the legislative effort that physicians are putting into ensuring that people have health care in Iowa has been really remarkable. What the Iowa AMA, American Medical Association delegation, has been able to do, the way that physicians have banded together to get the word out and to use their voices and help people understand that political interference in medical care is not serving anybody. I mean, it's definitely driving doctors out of Iowa where they're desperately needed, but it's creating barriers for all of us, for every single individual in our states, to receiving the care that we need and deserve. And these barriers are arbitrary and unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, my favorite tagline is that I'm going to say is pregnancy is too complicated to legislate. So you cannot come up with every scenario and make a law about it, because every patient is different, their complications, their medical illness, their prior surgeries. So we should not try to legislate something that is this complicated by people who use medically useless and clinically meaningless words. I also think in Iowa, I lobbied this year, or tried to lobby, to expand Medicaid for postpartum women up to 1 year, which most states have already done, but Iowa hasn't. And it was, nobody even talked about, like, it was like, nope, not even gonna address that. And it's very important.
We've been unsuccessful in Wisconsin as well at doing the same thing. It has led to more people in the healthcare community becoming politically active. Obviously, we've seen Dr. Lyerly had run for a seat in the legislature once before. Do you get the sense that a once more passive physician community or OBGYN community is going to be more outspoken from this point going forward?
I feel that traditionally, people went to medical school and we were taught, be apolitical, don't make it interfere with your patients, stay apolitical. However, we didn't make it political. People are coming in and making laws and making it harder for me to give basic standard of care medicine to my patients. They're taking away their ability to have healthcare and their rights. And so I think that transition for some of the older doctors is definitely coming, and hasn't been there because that's not how we're trained or taught, but because we're almost being forced into this.
Dr. Francesca Turner is an OBGYN in the Des Moines, Iowa area. Thank you very much for spending some time with us explaining what's happening there. We appreciate it so much, and we wish you all the best.
Great. Thank you so much.
You bet. Have a wonderful day. And Kristen, you're going to stick around because we've got Hometown Health coming up next. We have talked to Dr. Joel Charles before, but again, you can't say enough about what climate change is doing literally, physically to us.
Yeah, he's going to help us connect the dots between some of the things that are happening with climate change and our individual health.
All right. That is coming up in Hometown Health. And then maybe Luke Mathers, if he feels like it. And then we'll talk about what the Waukesha School District has in common with Eric Cartman from South Park when it comes to rainbows. We'll be back. You're up north. Back for Hometown Health, our usual Thursday segment with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who grabs a topic and grabs a guest that would be of importance to not just our own individual health, but that of an entire community or a state, or in this case, you know, a planet. So, but the thing is, Kristen, I mean, we've said this before, and it's always worth saying that every individual does indeed have an impact, even on a global problem. That when I was in the legislature and we would talk about, environmental rules, the pushback was always, well, we can't do anything because China's not doing anything, or all of this country's not doing anything. It's like, wait, so we debase ourselves by going down to the least common denominator? I mean, and I always use the same analogy. It's like, yeah, maybe your neighbor is peeing in Lake Wissota, but that doesn't mean that it's right for all of us to do that. Each individual's got to do what they can and have that kind of individual impact. I feel like I've gone way far afield, Kristen, for your introduction.
I am now having flashbacks to being a kid and me saying, but Marnie got to do it. And my mom saying, if Marnie jumped off a cliff, would you jump off the cliff?
And that's where it feels from an environmental standpoint. Dr. Joel Charles has been with us before to talk about these issues and is back to talk again with us for a little while this morning. Dr. Charles, good morning.
Yeah, thanks to have me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that in another 15 minutes or so. but let's reel it back into the individual impact, and that's the main message that we wanted to get out here. Is that, look, there are a lot of lobbyists out there. They're in Madison, they're in Washington D.C. They represent all kinds of big industries, but they are still, despite all of our cynicism, they are not the only people that our elected representatives listen to. And you want to point out, some of those opportunities that individuals have when it comes to the ways that we protect our environment. So what's new on that front?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just to start with a little level setting, I think folks have really seen the impacts of climate change in Wisconsin in the last month, mainly, through a mix of drought and also really unprecedented wildfire smoke coming down from Canada. And so we're really seeing that climate change is here. We know humans are causing it primarily through burning fossil fuels. The good news is that we largely have the tools to fix it, and that if we use those tools, not only will we slow climate change, but we'll be healthier and wealthier. We essentially have power over whether we use those tools. We have come together in the past to overcome the power of the big tobacco lobby that tried to sort of make sow denial around tobacco, and the fossil fuel industry is playing the same playbook. And we can win in that struggle too if we come together across rural-urban divides and other divides, and really recognize that we all have a shared interest in having clean air, clean water, safe homes. And we just have so much to gain in transitioning to a clean energy economy in Wisconsin.
You wrote a great piece in the Wisconsin Examiner last week or the week before about something simple that people can do. Climate change feels really overwhelming to many of us, but there are some pretty easy things that people can do. You wrote about something very fundamental. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the first point there is that one of the most nefarious things that the fossil fuel industry did was convince people that that climate change was an individual problem. And, it's good to act with integrity in life, but we shouldn't be confused about where the responsibility lies for climate change. And it's largely with the fossil fuel industry actively pushing against safeguards on pollution that will help us transition to a clean energy economy that will benefit everyone. And the big opportunity that is up right now is the Environmental Protection Agency is considering safeguards on pollution at coal and gas plants, which will really do a lot to decrease air pollution, improve health in the short term, so we're not breathing the short-term pollution from those power plants, but also protect our health in the long run, so the climate pollution from those plants isn't causing climate change and worsening things like the wildfire smoke that we've been seeing this summer.
Mm-hmm. You and the team at Healthy Climate Wisconsin are doing some incredibly important work that people may not be able to connect the dots between climate change and their own individual health. Can you help us do that?
Yeah, so the first thing to understand is that aside from climate change, burning fossil fuels is extremely damaging to health. Really, from the moment of conception to their last breath, our patients are made sick because we burn fossil fuels for energy. There's these superfine particulates, which I think a lot of your listeners already heard Dr. Amy Kalkbrenner talk about. Anytime you burn fossil fuels, those superfine particulates get through your lungs, into your bloodstream, can cross to the brain, the placenta. So from the moment of conception to last breath, they can make people sick, whether that's preterm births, stillbirths, delayed cognitive development in children, including autism. They can also cause asthma, other lung disease like COPD, heart attacks, strokes, cancer, dementia, really a lot of things that people are most concerned about. And the magnitude of those is really significant. Studies have been done in Wisconsin showing that we would probably save 1,900 lives a year in Wisconsin alone if we transitioned to a clean energy economy. And that might just sound like numbers, but when you do the job that I do and take care of patients like I do, those are real impacts on real people's lives. And so to me, I just see this as a huge opportunity to help all Wisconsinites not just survive, but thrive.
And so even go ahead.
Can I just highlight something that Joel just said?
Sure.
Because I think that when people think about air, like the bad air that we were breathing just a few weeks ago, we think about it like it's affecting my breathing. But I heard you say it's affecting so much more than just your lungs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, those particles get in the body and they irritate. We know essentially that they irritate and cause damage to every part of the body. And whether that's burning forests or burning fossil fuels. So you get it on the front end from burning the fossil fuels immediately. You get it on the back end from the climate change and the impacts like wildfire smoke. But either way, it's hurting your health. But the good news on the flip side of that is that by transitioning away from fossil fuels, you see this immediate local health benefit. I think one of the challenges for a lot of people is that they conceive of climate change as this thing that's far away in time and space. But when you think about the health impacts, it really brings it to now, to local communities. And that creates a really strong incentive to transition to clean energy. Not to mention the fact that clean energy is cheaper and generally are just better technologies. So it's a win-win, really.
So we've got this on two different fronts. One is on, you know, the pollution limits, the rules for power plants and for vehicles and for things like that. But then the other point to keep in mind is that even if, you know, we tightened up all the rules, if we don't do even more about a changing climate, it's not the pollution from the cars that'll get you. It's the smoke from Canadian wildfires and look at the flash flooding that they just had in mm-hmm. New York and Vermont. And we're just going to continue to see more of those. But to get back to the impact that you can have on pollution rules right now, what you're saying is Wisconsin Climate Health makes it easy to for every one of us to have impact with the EPA and say what we think the federal government should, whether those rules should be weak or strong, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The great news is that, you know, we are in a democracy where your voice matters and there are agencies that are actively trying to hear what you have to say on this. So here at Healthy Climate Wisconsin, we've built a website, wiclimatehealth.org/EPA. And we'd like your listeners to go there and to make their voices heard and encourage the Environmental Protection Agency to pass the strongest possible safeguards on pollution from power plants.
Besides doing this piece and besides what the EPA is doing right now, there were a lot of important measures passed within the Inflation Reduction Act. Let's talk about a few of those.
Yeah, so that's an example of where, you know, Americans came together and said that they prioritized clean air and clean water and that they wanted a vibrant economy. And they were heard. They were heard by President Biden. They were heard by Senator Baldwin, Reps Pocan and Moore and Kind. And frankly, you know, I really wish the public knew more about the Inflation Reduction Act, because I think it's the single piece of legislation which makes me most reassured about the world that my children are going to grow up in. It's going to help us do our part to slow climate change. It's decreasing energy costs. It's already bringing down inflation. But it, perhaps most importantly, it's turning the U.S. into a clean energy manufacturing superpower. And so the U.S. is going to be a much more vibrant economy in the next 50 to 100 years because of the passage of this bill. And there have just been tens of billions of dollars that have been announced in investments all across this country since that. But what I'm most excited about is that at the end of this year, probably, there are going to be announcements made about clean energy and efficiency rebates for low and moderate income folks, like a lot of my patients, where they can electrify their houses, decrease air pollution within their homes, and save just a ton of money. And so I think this is really going to be transformative for Americans' lives while also slowing climate change. And I'm just so excited that it passed.
And for folks who might have missed the program on Tuesday when, or on Wednesday, I'm sorry, yesterday, when we do our regular climate check segment with Melissa Baldoff, we had on yesterday State Assembly Representative Katrina Shanklin, the newest appointee to the new Council by Governor Evers, a green ribbon panel on clean energy. It's going to oversee a green investment fund, because there are things that we can all do on the individual level that are in the Inflation Reduction Act, ways that we can, you know, add solar to our homes or get credit for electric vehicles or whatnot. But then there are these big things that can be done through public-private partnerships that take advantage of things in the Inflation Reduction Act, but also create jobs. You know, that's the whole thing. We used to, again, hear the whole trope about, you know, that going green was going to cost jobs, when in fact it is the job creator, along with, you know, infrastructure overall, of the next decade.
Absolutely. It's really a triple win. I mean, the clean energy manufacturing economy is the industry of the 21st century. And there's a major international competition to see who's going to dominate that. And there's also, frankly, competition within the U.S. And right now, Wisconsin, for, I believe, legislative reasons, is lagging behind in that competition. And so I'd really like us to sort of put partisan politics aside and really get to the front of that competition, because Wisconsin has a really strong tradition of manufacturing in this state, not to mention the fact that end users of energy, whether they're businesses or homeowners, renters, will all save money and be healthier by really aggressively embracing the clean energy transition.
And let's remember that Wisconsin does not produce fossil fuels, but we 100% can produce renewable energy here in the state. So that is a 100% win for Wisconsin.
Yeah, to the tune of $14 billion a year. That's a lot of money. Not to mention the fact that most of that energy would be produced in rural areas. And so instead of having a situation where our cities are sending money out of state for fossil fuels for energy, they could be keeping that money in our rural communities, keeping in the municipal tax benefits from that, could keep roads repaired, keep schools open, a huge bonus to rural economies. So frankly, I don't see any area of shared interest between urban and rural areas that's greater than the transition to a clean energy economy. And that's one of the most important messages that I want your listeners to take away, is that we all benefit from this transition, and we should all be pulling in the same direction on it and going as fast as we can.
And if I could close on any one thing, one polling number that jumped out at me more than anything else in the past year in the Marquette poll was the number of people, it wasn't the Marquette poll, it was from Evergreen Action, but the amount of people who support what are in things like the Inflation Reduction Act for climate and for green energy exceeds the number of people for whom climate is a major issue, which means there are people who don't get as concerned about the climate as maybe we'd like them to be, but they sure do understand the benefits of having a green economy moving forward. And so between that and the input that you can have on EPA rules by going to wiclimatehealth.org/EPA, for that and much more, Dr. Charles, we thank you so much. Thanks again for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me. You have a great day.
All right. It was our great pleasure. And when we come back, we hope to be talking to the man, the myth, the legend, Luke Mathers. Right? I mean, remember last week? Yeah, it's always a work in progress. But let's check that out. And then we'll talk about the what does Waukesha have in common with Eric Cartman from South Park? After this, you're up north. We got there, Mr. Zomers.
We have Pork and Beans by Weezer, a suggestion from Dr. Lyerly.
On National Franks and Beans Day.
You like that?
Yeah. Yes, because, again, I don't think you could get away with that in the movie There's Something About Mary. You couldn't make that movie today, but at the time, Luke is dying to do the impression, but he's just not going to do Franks and Beans for us. Mr. Mathers, how are you?
I'm good, Mr. Krylo. How about yourself?
Well, good, good. I didn't check with your secretary. Did we get you for the whole 9 minutes?
Hopefully, unless any 5-alarm fires start going off. We'll see.
No, that sounds fine. How you doing?
I'm good.
Wait. Can I just... There's breaking news. Breaking news.
What?
The FDA approved the first over-the-counter birth control pill. Just now, it just popped into my inbox, and I couldn't help myself. I had to be impulsive.
All right. Well, wait. Tell us a bit more about this.
There is now a birth control that people are going to be able to get over the counter. It's a progestin-only pill, so it's not the traditional birth control pill, but it is safe, it is effective, and it is a step in the right direction. Woo!
My goodness. All right. Well, good deal.
I am surprised, but very happy.
It's some overdue good news. So I was just looking to see. Yep, I'm seeing it crossing the wires right now through the New York Times and the AP. So yeah, you're going to be hearing more about this, I would guess, maybe on Town Call later on today on the Civic Media Radio Network.
There you go.
How's that for dictating your programming there, Luke?
Well, that is Mr. William Walters' prerogative. So I don't know what he's got in store for today, but maybe it might pop up during that noon hour. But very... very excited to Aaron, was that you changing my name on there?
Maybe.
Okay, we got you back to
throwing me off.
It's a radio show. Pay no attention to the video shenanigans that,
hey,
that
we
go
do
on
so much beat. More than radio here at Civic Media.
You should
be paying attention to everything that we're doing on socials as well, like broadcasting live right now here with Up North News Radio.
That's right. Hey, so the Waukesha teacher who called attention to the elementary school concert that had nixed two songs about rainbows. That teacher was fired yesterday by the Waukesha School Board, ostensibly for, breaking district policy by not keeping her concerns in-house, when I think she agrees. She has really not much for regrets about what she did, that you needed to let the public know that, you had a school district that was essentially afraid of rainbows. And I'm like, where have I heard this before? And you have to go way, way back to like the first season of South Park. But it's a joke. We've been using this line ever since. And it's like, wait, this is what Eric Cartman had to say about rainbows.
Did you see that rainbow this morning?
Yeah, it was huge.
I hate those things.
Nobody hates rainbows.
Yeah, what's there to hate about rainbows?
Well, you'll just be sitting there minding your own business and they'll come marching in and crawl up your leg and start biting the inside of your and you'll be all like, hey, get out of my you stupid rainbows.
I don't know. They always say this about The Simpsons, that The Simpsons, predicted things that would happen decades later. South Park is not far behind, that you would have an entire political class of people afraid of rainbows because they might bite them in the backside or whatever the reason is.
The hindsight, you know? Yeah. Well, the district, I believe, never really identified what was the problem with the Rainbow Land song. They did not say which portion of the song was controversial. They had a very long meeting with the school board yesterday to come to that decision to fire that first grade teacher. It's not the only instance, though, where we're seeing this happen in our schools, Pat. The Arrowhead School District also met yesterday and decided to take a vote. I don't know if it was unanimous or not, but there was a large favor to ban safe spaces and rainbow things in the Arrowhead School District, as well as Black Lives Matter signs. So there are school districts throughout Wisconsin right now that are taking these steps and essentially saying what can and cannot be talked about. And rainbows are apparently at the top of that list for Wisconsin students.
Using the logic that these things are divisive.
Yes.
You know, first it was that they're controversial, and now they're divisive. And again, all I ask of you is to go back in time and imagine a school district saying, no, you can't read, you know, Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech in class because it's divisive. Or honestly, go back hundreds of years before that. No, we're not going to give any education to left-handed people because left-handed people are evil and are unnatural. You know, it's just a continuation of trying to other some other group. And it's downright sad that you have to use Eric Cartman to make fun of them, you know, for taking bigotry and saying, oh, well, your anti-bigotry things are divisive. But such is the world we're in now.
And the other argument made, Pat, is that, oh, well, if you have a safe space, that indicates that maybe there's not safe spaces in our high school. And yeah. I don't know if these individuals just haven't been to high school very often, but those aren't the best places. They're not. And so to act like the measures taken by some of the teachers or administrators in our public schools to provide the opportunity to let the most vulnerable students know that they can come to them and they have an ally in them, and removing that from the schools, I fear, is going to lead to even larger problems, because ignoring a problem doesn't actually solve it.
Kristen, that's just what you see with your patients who you have patients that need a safe space, and imagine not being able to tell them what they could do, what their resources are.
I just can't.
No.
I mean, my oldest son right now is looking for teaching jobs in music, actually. And as he is looking around the state at what's available, I hear about the different school districts and what's happening, and we're driving good teachers away. We're creating environments that are so unfriendly and uncomfortable, and it just doesn't serve us as a population.
No. All right, let's turn to some more positive topics here. Aaron, do you have any info on Charlie Behrens and the Cripescast this weekend on Civic Media?
I saw the email that I got the Cripescast last night.
There's a comedian, Rory. His last name is escaping me right now, but he's been in a number of movies and television shows. He's joining Charlie on the Cripescast this weekend.
It's Rory Scovel.
Rory. Yep, Scovel.
Okay. There we go. Very good.
If you saw the picture, go check out the social media for the Cripescast. You can see the picture. You'll be like, oh, that guy. Okay, you've seen him before.
Okay. And then one more time, I should mention Civic Pints, which is our statewide, it's not a blood drive, it's a blood donation challenge through July 31st. Go donate blood. Take a selfie. Upload it. What's the hashtag there, Mr. Mathers?
I believe it's just Civic Pints, but all the details on the Civic Media website. So if you've got any questions, go check it out. You can see all of the rules, regulations, how to submit your selfie to be entered to win a number of terrific prizes.
All right. That's at civicmedia.us/giveblood. Although I always have a problem with internet addresses when you have to use the slash inappropriately at sometimes. /giveblood.
Just yeah. go to the homepage. It's right at the top of the homepage. You don't even have to worry about any weird URLs. Civicmedia.us. It's right there.
Thank you, Mr. Mathers. Thank you, Dr. Lyerly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zommers.
Yep.
Have a terrific Thursday, Pat.
Y'all have a great Thursday. See you here tomorrow, where it's always a beautiful day up north.